This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. An estimated 1 in 5 women are sexually assaulted on college campuses across the country. That's according to Vice President Joe Biden and the White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault. The Department of Education announced investigations into how over 50 academic institutions handle sexual assault allegations, including some top-tier schools like Harvard and Dartmouth. And here in Texas, UT Pan America in the Rio Grande Valley and Southern Methodist University made that list. Do you think universities are taking sexual assault seriously? Are they doing all that they can to protect their students? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, Cheryl Tynes, is Associate Vice President for Academic Affairs at Trinity University, and Mia Ferguson is a student and advocate for End Rape on Campus, a group that provides free direct support to college activists to hold universities accountable to how they handle sexual assault. She's also the lead complainant in a Title IX proceeding against Swarthmore College. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you, David.
Cheryl, let me ask you about this list, 54 college campuses across the country being called out by the Department of Education. So what are they being accused of doing?
So Title IX is the Office of Civil Rights piece that ensures academic equity. And a lot of people think of Title IX as related to sports and
athletics. Yeah, we hear about sports all the time.
Yeah.
But there's more to it than that.
But there is absolutely more to it than that. It is meant to ensure equal educational access. And so young women in these schools, some young men, have come forward and have said, because of things that have happened in terms of sexual assault and how it was handled and how I was treated either before, during the process, or after, I did not have access to an equal education. And so those schools have complaints filed.
So just because a school was not on that list doesn't mean they necessarily got a clean bill of health.
It doesn't necessarily mean that people are doing everything that they can be doing. It means that no students have filed a Title IX complaint.
So what are some of the complaints that these potential victims, they're saying that they weren't respected, they weren't paid attention to? What happened?
Sometimes it's a matter of how it's handled afterwards in terms of the person who was the perpetrator being allowed back on campus. It was how they were treated in terms of being protected from being in the same classes as that other student, being in the same residence halls, that kind of thing, or even just during the process of how it was investigated, how it was handled in terms of blaming the victim, and those kinds of problems, you know, in the process of the investigation.
Mia Ferguson, are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
Okay, thanks for joining us. I know we were having some computer issues, so thanks for hanging on with us. So you are a student and an advocate for End Rape on Campus. What's your reaction to what Joe Biden said? And he says he wants it's everyone's responsibility on a college campus to make it safe for the students, to protect people from sexual assault, and when they released this 54 academic institution list.
Well, it's definitely exciting to see this issue come to the national agenda and be part of a conversation that people can have, you know, at their dinner tables when they're talking about it with their students, with their children, with their friends and family, to make sure that we're talking about consent. We're talking about also making sure that our colleges and universities support us as students.
So, Mia, I'm told that you had gone through this experience. You were sexually assaulted as a first-year student, and that is why you brought this complaint. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened?
Yeah, I was sexually assaulted as a first-year student here at Swarthmore College, a pretty small liberal arts college similar to Trinity down there. And I really didn't know what to do. You know, the student, again, as you were just mentioning, was in my classes with me, was someone I really trusted and cared about, and I had no idea, you know, how to tell anyone about what had happened. And, you know, this is no alcohol was involved. I went to this great all-girls school that taught me to speak out for myself, and yet I still didn't feel like I had the tools on campus to get help. When I finally did, unfortunately, the case didn't go through the reporting process as is required under federal law. And I ended up connecting with a wonderful national network now of students and faculty who are working to make sure our colleges and universities are well-equipped to help their students in the aftermath of sexual violence and to prevent it in the first place.
Now, you're filing a case against the university because they violate what, the Clery Act? What is the Clery Act?
Yeah, so the Clery Act is specifically to do with crime reporting. So it does fall to some extent under Title IX, which is about sex discrimination and limiting the hostile environment that is present on campuses. But the Clery Act essentially just states that schools, every college and university across the country that gets federal funding has to keep track of the crimes that are happening on campus and then publish that very publicly. So that can include crimes like burglary, but it also includes murder and sexual assault. So it's a big range of crimes, but it also states that students should be given the option to go to the police if they'd like to, and also that they should be given full psychological support and access to that support.
So you have rights, and were you made aware of those rights when you reported what happened to you? They said these are the things that you need to know.
Right. No, I mean, I certainly wasn't, and I don't think most students across the country have been until this big wave of publicity has come out and more students are saying, hey, wait, you know, it didn't just hurt me, it didn't just traumatize me, it violated the law when the school treated me the way they did. And that's been a really helpful realization. I mean, for me at school, I felt like something was so wrong, but I didn't know what tools I had to address what had happened. And it wasn't until a staff member told me that from what they understood, the college had been destroying evidence of sexual assault cases that I said, hey, this sounds like a legal issue. You know, I'd watched enough Law and Order at that point to know destroying evidence was not within the law. But that's when I learned about the Clery Act and Title IX, just because of the great work of students down at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And so now we're seeing similar work happening, you know, at University of Texas, Northeastern University up in Massachusetts also just filed today, a group of students. So we're really seeing students mobilize and realize that they're entitled to these legal support systems.
So what's the number one thing that you want a student to know if they find themselves in this terrible situation? What should be their first step?
Yeah, certainly that they have legal rights and that they can reach out to gain support and to understand those rights from the get-go. It doesn't mean, you know, if you want to file a complaint regarding your school, it doesn't mean that it's a public battle. It doesn't mean you're involved in a lawsuit, and it can be very private. It really just means that you're exercising your rights to help the future students on campus.
So they don't have to lawyer up right away, right? But they do.
Sorry?
They don't have to lawyer up right away, but they do need to know.
Oh, no, not at all.
But they need to know what their rights are and to stand up for those rights.
So,
okay,
exactly.
we're going to continue our conversation. We're talking about sexual assault on college campus, about an effort nationwide to hold campuses accountable and to educate victims about their rights and trying to change the culture to let people know that this is not acceptable and this will not stand. This is The Source on KSTX, and we're going to be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about sexual assault on college campuses. Recently, the Department of Education announced investigations into how 54 academic institutions across the country handle sexual assault investigations, including a couple of schools here in Texas, UT Pan America, which is in the Rio Grande Valley, and Southern Methodist University. Do you think universities are taking sexual assault seriously? Are they doing all that they can to protect their students and also inform the victims of their rights? Tell us what happened to you. Your story could inspire others and could make a big change. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and comment directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. Cheryl Tynes joins us. She is an Associate Vice President for Academic Affairs at Trinity University. And Cheryl, you also teach sociology.
I do.
and you deal with these types of issues?
I do. I want to go back a little bit to what Mia was saying about the Clery Act. The Clery Act was passed in 1990, and it really, to me, the big major takeaway on this point is the importance of reporting. Jean Clery was a 19-year-old student at Lehigh University. She was one of three children. She had two older brothers who went to Tulane University in New Orleans. Her parents were real protective of her as their third child, and they wanted her to go to a more protected place. They had heard about some crime statistics in New Orleans, and they didn't want her to go to New Orleans, so they sent her to Lehigh, which is in a much more rural place. And they sent her there because they thought she would be safe. She went there and at 19 was raped and assaulted. She was strangled with an electrical cord, and she was killed. This was a fellow student, and this student had a track record. And it wasn't, no one connected the dots in the story of her horrific murder. The really important thing for students or anyone who's sexually assaulted is they must report. If institutions are going to be able to connect the dots in terms of repeat offenders, especially, we need to know names.
You got to have the dots. You can't have an institution erasing the dots.
And as Mia said, you can elect to keep it so that you don't go forward. Even when you contact the Office of Civil Rights with regard to a Title IX investigation, there are students who contact them who choose to not go forward. But it's really, really, really important for students to report. And one of the things that has happened in the last year because of all of the high-profile media attention with the president and vice president in terms of reporting is that more students are coming forward. And that is a really good thing. I think it can be scary. People are saying, okay, our Clery stats are going to go up next year. Is that going to scare people away? And what I tell people is that these things have always been going on, but they're not always reported. The estimates are about two-thirds, some people estimate 95% of cases are never reported. How can people follow through if there's not reporting? And yet people who are victimized, who are survivors, have fear. They fear for what's going to happen. They want it to go away. And one of the things that I love hearing from students, and this is nationally, is that they feel a huge burden is taken off of them once they report. And so it's scary to report, but it can be a way to unload that burden by doing that.
Mia, does that ring true? How did you feel when you reported?
Honestly, I think for me, I ended up receiving, I've developed post-traumatic stress disorder, but only in the aftermath of working with my college through the process of reporting. So a lot of the responsibility here is to make sure, yes, of course, that students can come forward and report these cases so that schools can continue to track criminals as they're required to and can make sure that other students are safe. But also for those schools to make sure it's really easy for students to come forward. It shouldn't feel, again, as you were saying before, like the victim is being blamed. It shouldn't feel like it's their responsibility to keep the campus safe. At the end of the day, it's really much better if students can feel like coming forward was a positive experience, whereas in the status quo in the last few years, students who have been coming forward have had a really horrific time, many of them, not all of them, of course, in doing so. So even, again, like the case up at Northeastern that just came out today, a student came forward. She reported that she was raped. The person was found responsible through the school system. But during the appeals process, he was able to withdraw from the school and transfer to another institution. Meanwhile, the victim was being asked horrible questions, trying to defend herself in the process, and ended up withdrawing from Northeastern because it felt like such a horrific environment for her to be in. And I think she probably would have preferred if she hadn't reported because it went so poorly. But it's pretty simple for schools and universities to avoid something like that, right, just by making the process much easier for students, much more secure for students, and then making sure that that's something that they can tell their friends, that, you know, we can trust this school, right? We can make sure we can report things here. And so let's go ahead and, you know, tell them when something happens, as long as it doesn't hurt us more in the aftermath.
Cheryl Tynes, Associate Vice President for Academic Affairs at Trinity University. A couple of years back, Trinity was accused of not being aggressive in protecting the rights of victims in these cases. But since then, Trinity has turned it around. What reforms have been put in place to do that?
So I really think of this as a chronological process with education coming first. And so new student orientation programs are really important. People who do new student orientation programming nationally sometimes talk about, I've heard a colleague talk about a red zone, which is the first 6 to 8 weeks that people are on campus. Sometimes you hear about upper class students really preying on those first year students. And so doing some early education during new student orientation.
Because these kids, they're out of high school, they're
right.
new on college,
right.
they want to party, they think they're
right.
supposed to,
right.
they can't handle it.
They may or may not know their tolerance for alcohol, they're staying up late, they're out doing things, they want to fit in, they want to be liked. And so they're
rushing for
right.
sororities or what have you.
Right. So what the first kind of phase in the chronology is the education and the programming related to that. Prevention with bystander intervention programs, I think, is really, really important. People talk about that fear alone, instituting fear in programming is not a good way to go, that young people have sort of this illusion of unique. Well, if you only make it about fear and saying you could be prosecuted, there could be sexually transmitted diseases, there could be lots of issues, people are going to say that doesn't apply to me. And so I think that making sure that you go beyond the fear and you say, here's how you protect each other. People talk in bystander intervention about you're at a party and you don't know what to do, but you see something, you're a guy, and you see one of your guy friends preying on maybe a first-year student. You can flip on the lights. You can turn off the music. If you're a female with another female, you can say, here, I'm bringing you the tampon that you asked for. I mean, there are things that bystanders can do to protect each other. And what Biden was saying is that whether it be the president of the university, all the way down to individual students, everybody has to be doing something. And I think students looking out for each other can be really powerful. Prevention is a piece of it. Reporting and then policy changes are really important too. As Mia was referring to, having a policy that is sensitive to what people are going through. Investigative model is what people are advocating for, so that you're not having a hearing where people are being asked to go through the gory details of what happened to them in a public venue. It is traumatizing, and PTSD is very common for victims of sexual assault.
But part of the prosecution is, you want people to know that you do prosecute when people are caught mm-hmm. doing these types of things, and that they're put away or somehow.
Absolutely.
So how do you do one without the other, exposing the victim to undue attention?
So with an investigative model, you do the background research and investigation, and then the hearing is really just deciding on what the sanction is going to be. And I think, in a small place like a Swarthmore or a Trinity, when you expel a student, which should be the default punishment when there's penetration, that should be the default punishment. And believe you me, the word will spread.
So, Mia Ferguson, do you think that the culture can change? Do you think we can get the word out there and let people know that this is we're not kidding around?
Yeah, I think absolutely, especially just in teaching students about healthy sex in general. So conversations around rejection, ownership to each other's bodies, that kind of thing, can really help prevent these cases as well. So in many circumstances, there are students who, there was no one around them when they were sexually assaulted, but certainly they were preyed upon, and it might not be in the typical sense when we hear preyed upon, right? Like I imagine a vulture coming after me, right? But that's a lot of our narrative around this, is there's always this villain that's predating upon us. But oftentimes these are people we think we can trust. We think we can get close to. They're, the kid who's going to judge us in the fraternity, that's part of our system. So making sure that we can have conversations with those people about consent, and also teaching each other more, again, what are those red flags? It's not necessarily that someone is being, a villain to someone or being particularly physically aggressive. It might be that they make a lot of backhanded comments to the student to, make sure they have sex with them or to pressure them into it. So it's looking at the nuance and the fine details in people's language and behavior, and just becoming a lot more conscious around being comfortable with rejection, being comfortable rejecting people, and also having conversations around sex so you can come forward afterwards, especially.
Cheryl, for Trinity, when this 54 academic institutions list came out from the Department of Education, how scary was that for the academic world? Like, was this new thing? Was this like, this is a new day has happened and everyone's got to take this serious, we got to step up?
I think the last year has been a new day, and I agree with Mia, it's all good news from my vantage point. I do want to say one thing from the national research that I think is really, really important about this. Roughly 15% of college men admit to some form of non-consensual sex or sexual assault during their college career, roughly 15%. That's the ones who admit it. Of that percent, 2% say that they did it once and they've never done it again. You've got the rest of the percentage, roughly 13% of college men, who have between 7 to 14 victims. In one of the studies, there were men who had 50 or more victims. So there is predation going on. Yeah. And I think that's where we need to keep our eye on, again, right, back to the reporting.
And Mia, you want to...
I certainly agree. It's in both spaces. And, of course, a lot of these perpetrators are using, you know, the same tactics on many women. But, you know, this also happens in intimate partner environments, and we should make sure... I think schools and universities also should stay conscious to the variety of cases that they might see. And of course, as you said, keeping expulsion is the primary option, but keeping in mind what some victims might request otherwise, you know, if this was an intimate partner who violated them.
Well, why is expulsion the ultimate? Why isn't jail time the ultimate punishment?
Right. So a lot of these victims, you know, obviously the criminal justice system is really hard to manage in a lot of cases. Especially if you've been sexually assaulted, you might not have a huge amount of physical evidence that would be required for the standard of evidence in a criminal court. But within the school system, the standard of evidence is a little bit lower, and also we're not looking at putting students through criminal charges. So it makes sense that it's a lower standard, in that the worst that can happen really is that they're expelled.
All right, Mia Ferguson, we thank you so much for joining us. And she's a student and advocate for End Rape on Campus, a group that provides free direct support for campus activities to hold universities accountable for how they handle sexual assault. Cheryl Tynes joins us. She is Associate Vice President for Academic Affairs at Trinity University. This is The Source on KSTX, and we'll be back after the NPR News.